I'm Nick McGrath and welcome to Cardicast, a glam podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. I'm chatting today with my good friend, Wen Moore, Library Manager at Diamond Valley College. And thank you for taking some time, Wen, to talk to me today.
Thanks for having me.
It would be really great to sort of have a discussion, maybe to start with, about what it is that you do in your job, because I think listeners may not be familiar what it means to run and manage a school library.
Sure. I've worked in a few different school libraries, and I have to say that they're all really different. They operate fairly autonomously, and although each library maintains the sort of standards that librarians should be maintaining in terms of collection management and resource management, they are all really different. So my experience in the libraries I've been in will probably be quite different from some of the other experiences that other school librarians have had. And I think one of the key things to how a library runs and what your job ends up being is how many people you have staffing the library and what services the school really needs from you. So my current library that I'm working in, I am the only full-time staff member in the library. I have a library assistant who works about 50% of her time in the library, which means I pretty much do everything. I do everything from collection management, policy development, through to creating and running programs for the students, through to cataloging books. I cover books, I dust shelves, I water plants. You really just have to be prepared to wear whatever hat you happen to pick up on the day. And every day is different as well. So some days the library is fairly quiet and we don't have a huge number of people come in and ask us for assistance, and I might spend all day doing admin tasks or creating displays. And other days I spend the entire day at the circulation desk answering questions or providing resources, or sometimes just chatting to the students who come in, because that's a big part of my job as well.
And I guess that it's been, you know, obviously it's difficult right now for many of us working in GLAM that are currently find ourselves in lockdown. It's difficult because we're sort of away from our physical collections. Do you still have access to the library itself, but just the students, you don't have your students there? Is that right? Or
That was right until last week.
Yes, yeah.
When I was told that I really shouldn't be coming in at all and was sent home. So I filled up a number of boxes with books that needed covering and books that needed genre labels and brought those home. I unfortunately don't have access to the library management system from home because of the way our school network is set up, which is really frustrating, but there's a lot of other work that I can do. So I'm trying to, while we're in lockdown, create a library of display materials so that I can set up a calendar of displays that we can rotate through and make sure that there's always something interesting students to look at in the library, as well as making my job a little bit easier so that I'm not constantly thinking about what I can do next. There's also a limited number of online resources that I can provide to our students, but I have created a Book Week website with links to a lot of different experiences that students can have online. I thought that this year, since nobody's going anywhere in Melbourne, and because the theme was old worlds, new worlds, and other worlds, which kind of made me think of travel, I put together things like operating the Mars, I think it's the Curiosity. You can travel on the routes that the Curiosity traveled on Mars and read about the experiments that were performed by the robot and what they discovered. From that to things like visiting the Louvre or the Smithsonian, I've got a link to the Melbourne Museum. We've got virtual tours of different cities, some virtual tours of the Great Wall of China and the Forbidden City, things like that. So even though it's not necessarily entirely book focused, it's at least taking them out of their current environment and providing them with, I guess, a nonfiction experience.
I think that's something we've discussed before about that you need to understand your students and the cohort. So you said I think there's 600 students at your school. So it's really important to understand their needs so that when you're as the school, managing the school library, you can sort of encourage maybe readers that are not, you know, they're not opening books maybe, but you can encourage them down a track I'm really interested in that. I love that you get to know your students, you know, on a personal level and get to understand what their interests lie. And that's how you sort of, that helps you with your acquisitions for the collection, where you might guide them through the collection. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. It is, working in a school library, I think, is quite different from working in maybe a public library or a university library, in that we have a specific group of clients, and we'll have them for sort of 6 years if they stay at the school from year 7 till year 12. Have I done my maths right? Yes, 6 years.
That's right.
We'll have them for 6 years. So you really do get to know them. And our regular library users might only be maybe 30% of the students that we have at the school. But you have a lot of conversations with the students in order to get to know what their interests are and what they enjoy other than reading, if they're not big readers, so that you can find books that might tie into those things. And one of the examples that we were talking about was the boy who watches The Walking Dead. You know, we had a long chat about various different things, and I got to know him a little bit, and we ended up on The Walking Dead, and we talked about The Walking Dead graphic novels. He reluctantly said he would try the first one. And like, they're big books, they're big hardcover books and kind of heavy to carry around. And with kids who are reluctant readers, sometimes they don't necessarily like to be seen reading, but he got into the graphic novels pretty quickly and became totally enamored with them. And, you know, within 3 days he was back saying, could he have book two?
Oh, wow.
It was fantastic. It was really, really cool. He's a pretty quiet boy generally. He doesn't, you know, he's not somebody who'll come up necessarily to chat with me just of his own accord. But now we're quite good friends because we've had this ongoing conversation, and I've ended up spending about $800 on Walking Dead graphic novels specifically for this one boy, because he's reading, and that's what I want. That's, you know, that's the aim.
Exactly.
But it's also fantastic that he's recommending them to his friends.
Yeah.
So definitely. we've now got a queue of year 8 boys who are lining up to read the graphic novels, and we got stuck, I think, at book 8. It was out of print, and we had to kind of work quite hard to find a copy. And there was this queue of boys chomping at the bit at the library circulation desk, you know, saying, "Where's the book? Where's the book?" And it was just, as I wished I could take a photo of them.
Oh.
But that kind of thing is really rewarding, but it does require that you know your cohort really well. And so I do spend a lot of time just chatting with students, trying to find out something about them. And it requires me to be quite on top of sort of pop culture as well, which is lovely. I'm not complaining about that. I'm a huge fan of graphic novels and manga and, you know, Marvel and D&D. So I've got those kind of eclectic tastes myself. And it's really cool to have those conversations with young people.
It gives them a positive experience of going to the library and reading, you know, at a high school level, which is really important, that hopefully they'll take it on for when they leave school and, you know, for the rest of their life, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of understand that once they get to maybe year 10 or 11, their reading for recreational will drop off because they've got so many other priorities. You know, a lot of them are working part-time jobs. They might have a partner. They're obviously doing VCE. There's a lot on their plate. But if we can try and embed some of those reading habits when they're in the earlier years of high school, I feel that they will definitely pick it up again as young adults and into adulthood. And even just for them to have a couple of years where they've had a very positive experience of reading for pleasure, that's gold. It just sets them up later in life to really have something to pass on to, you know, maybe their friends or their own kids if they have kids, and that continuation of reading for pleasure then becomes automatic. You know, I think it's hard when you don't have any experience of reading for pleasure to be told to read. It would be like me being told to play football. Like, I don't want to, you know.
Yeah,
it's just not my thing. So,
exactly.
Yeah, perhaps if I had a more positive experience of ball sports, I would be super keen on that. But
it's I think we've discussed too that, you know, for some people, libraries can be a safe haven at school. Like, and I definitely had that experience myself when I was at school. And I was often attracted to spending time in, you know, at lunchtime at school, just in the library, because I felt safe there. But also as a place where I was always interested and loved being surrounded by books. But I think, you know, for students that are not so, you know, like you said, it's really interesting. They don't want to be seen with a book. And I always, you know, like there's that horrible, that peer pressure that kids have at school. But if reading can be seen as like you had that group of students that were really into Walking Dead and then suddenly realized that reading can be cool. It can be something that's fun and cool. And, you know, rather than thinking it's uncool, actually reading is a cool thing to get into from a young age. Maybe even when they're in their later years in high school, when they are stressed with doing exams and things, sometimes, you know, some recreational reading can be a really good, you know, some downtime, you know.
Absolutely. And I've always had a few students who will come in and get books, you know, regardless of what else is happening in their life, they continue to read, and that's really wonderful. There was one student who I had to meter out the books that I loaned her because I knew that she had year 12 exams. And, you know, she'd be coming in and borrowing out four big tomes, you know, like a whole series of books at once and bringing them back 4 days later. And I said, had to say to her, I'm going to give you one book at a time and you have to promise to do some studying. And for her, it was definitely an escape from, you know, the pressures and the reality of what she was facing. So I totally agree with you. The library is a safe haven. That's every day at lunchtime and before school and after school. And also during class time for students who are maybe feel that they will study better outside of the classroom environment for whatever reason, or, you know, especially having had all of these lockdowns, students are sometimes a little bit confronted by the amount of noise and people in a classroom environment, and so they are more comfortable in the quiet space that the library provides. We're very happy to supervise students who come into the library to do their work independently. But at lunchtime, we run activities, and there are a number of clubs that run out of the library, both student-run clubs and clubs that are run by myself. And it means that there's always something happening. So you can get involved in something that's going on in the library. Everything that we do there is done on the basis that anybody's free to join. So there are no sort of exclusive little groups that are running a club that nobody else is allowed to join. If you run a club in the library, you have to be prepared for anybody to join in with you. And that's worked really well. We've found some really wonderful friendships that have been formed from that. And also for students who are maybe a little bit quiet, to just be able to sit in a group, it's really a wonderful way for them to socialize without having the pressure of making friends, I guess.
It's another way, I guess it's a way to work out, you know, if you have interests in common, just by, oh, you're in that club as well, or, you know. Absolutely. I didn't realize you had that interest, and I guess it sort of would be a nice icebreaker for some kids, I think, as well.
Yeah, and I'm in all the clubs, which is, you know, kind of good and bad, I guess. I'm sort of in the background of most of them, and just so that I sort of know what's going on and can introduce other students to the club if there's somebody who I think would benefit or enjoy being part of it, but maybe they're a little bit reluctant to join on their own. So my usual tactic is that if there's a student in the library who looks as though they might be a little bit isolated or struggling to engage, I'll get them involved in a game of Uno, because that's a fantastic icebreaker. And I've usually got, you know, four or five people hanging around chatting who are happy to just jump into a game. So we do that and we chat, and I find out a little bit about them. I get them to talk just enough with the group so that they feel comfortable. And once I figure out what their interests are, I see whether I can pair them up with somebody or encourage them to join one of the groups that's running. Or, you know, if necessary, I'll be their friend. And we'll do stuff together for a few weeks until they feel comfortable. And I'll kind of drag other kids in and get them to participate in stuff. Things that you can do that are maybe hands-on that also allow conversation, like origami, building puzzles, playing cards. Those kinds of activities are really great because the students can be busy doing something. There's no pressure for them to sit and look at each other. And you can slowly help them get to know other people and then, like, let them go off and be friends. And it's great.
and then I guess it becomes like the library space is not just a space where you go to find amazing books and speak to the awesome school, you know, library manager who's lovely and really welcoming, but it's also a place where you can socialize and, in you know, there's lots of positive kind of, I guess, associations with having clubs at the library, I think it's just, it makes it a lived in space as well as, you know, a space.
Very much so. Yeah.
I think that's important
and,
as well.
And the great thing is that if I can, you know, if I can figure out what students are interested in and enroll them in, or in, you know, engage them in a club or get them to participate in some activities, then I can often talk to them about what they'd like to read as well. And
yes,
my aim is to try and put a book in their hand as they leave. If if I can do that, you know, great. If I can't, well, there's always next time. But the more I get to know them, the more likelihood there is that the book I help them choose will be the right book for them. And then they'll trust me the next time I recommend something. So it's very much a slow process of, I guess, being authentic with them and gaining their trust and showing a genuine interest in what they're interested in.
There's probably, you know, students that you have that might not have any books at home, you know, that, which I always think is crazy because I've always had, you know, it's hard to believe, but it happens.
It happens. Fishes in your house.
What? Yeah, it is. Like, I just can't imagine having a house without books in it, but I know that that does happen. And, you know, for those students coming to the library, it must be a really important space for them to have access to those amazing resources, things that other students might take for granted. Do you think, like, I guess that's a big part of it, is thinking about the collection that you have and how it caters for all types of students from, and you've got, you know, like 6 years there as well. So you've got, you know, people with a huge amount of different interests and different age groups. But you also, yeah, the great thing is you've got students. So you know that they're all going to be students in your school that are going to your library. So there's, you know, you have a kind of, I guess, a clientele that you know.
The audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do try really hard to make sure that the collection is a reflection of what they're interested in. So we have book recommendation policy where students can come up and recommend anything that they'd like to read for our purchase list. And you know, there have been one or two things that I've said, look, I don't really think that's suitable for a school library. But on the whole, I'll pretty much buy anything that they ask me for. On the proviso that, number one, they will read it when it arrives, and number two, they'll recommend it to their friends.
Oh, that's and great.
Most, yeah, well, this is, you know, they have to invest something back because, the, you know, the library budget is not limitless.
That's
and
right.
When they're asking me for, you know, a series, like a 40-book manga series, it's a big chunk out of my budget, so they have to commit to actually reading it. And it is great because it does mean that we then have a reader advisory service that's kind of run by the students. And we do have a lot of friend groups reading the same books. You know, I'll have two students come up to the circulation desk, one returning a book and the other one borrowing that book.
I love that about
that's,
school.
That's always great. Yeah,
you just gave me such nostalgic feels then for, you know, when there was a popular series and all the kids wanted to read that series. And how, if your friend was reading it, you would often go up with them, like when they returned it, so you could get it the next person.
Make sure nobody else gets it in between. And sometimes there'll be a book in the series that's missing and somebody else has borrowed and they've kept for too long. And the student will come up every day and look at you with this expression and say, has that book come in yet? You'll have to go and find that student in their classroom and say, look, you know, you're holding this book hostage and there's a whole queue of people waiting.
I love it. Oh, wow. That is, oh my goodness, there's so many nostalgic feels I'm getting from just thinking about that right now.
It sounds great. Like you had a really good experience in your school library, and that's so good to hear.
I did it. I'll never forget, you know, the times I had it at my school library. I know my dad had a really positive experience at his school library, and the librarian loved him because he literally would just pick up a book out off the shelf and just read. He's a avid reader, and the librarian was really encouraging him, would encourage him and say, well, you know, you've read all these books, have you read this? And constantly trying to see what the next book she could hand him, because he just read everything.
And that's lovely. Having a voracious reader like that is such a pleasure.
Oh, yes. I'm sure you have many students like that. Like you said, the student that was sort of reading, maybe instead of needed to balance the study with the reading.
Yeah, there's always a few, and probably, you know, sort of half a dozen in each year level. And that's, I think that's pretty good out of maybe 100, I think we've got about 130 kids at each year level. If you've got, you know, sort of maybe 10 who are voracious readers, and just gobble up everything you have in the library, That's fantastic. It can be hard to keep up with them sometimes. You know, they'll read, there's one student who loves Jackie French, and we have all Jackie French's books, and they read everything by Jackie French. And then they said, what else have you got? And I was kind of like, heck, I don't know. You know, you've read all the books I would have recommended to you, now what? So I had to go and do some research. And this student is now somebody who, when I buy new books that I think will be good, I often give them to her and say, read this and tell me what you think and who I can recommend it to. And it's great. We've got a great sort of working relationship.
Oh, the that's student brilliant.
And I, she's a fantastic reader, and she's got really interesting taste in books, and she's quite open-minded about trying new things. You know, some students, and I know I was the same, I think I only read fantasy when I was probably 14 or 15. And some students really don't like being taken out of their comfort zone, but I can ask her to read just about anything, and she'll take it on, which is really super.
Oh, that's brilliant. I think that's sort of probably, and also you're giving her, you know, some responsibility by saying, oh, what, you know, let me know what you think, like being,
yeah, you know, absolutely.
I think kids want to feel, you know, they want to be heard. And I think we've talked about this too. Kids need to be heard. And I think listening to what they have to say, taking their book recommendations, you know, and also encouraging them to tell their fellow students and friends about the books, you know, that's a really great way of sort of valuing what their own opinion, you know, so that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Cause often that's kids so don't important. Get heard, do they? Yeah.
Yeah. It really is for students to have agency in their school environment and in their education. And I think especially in the school library, because, well, our school library, almost our whole collection is recreational reading material. And so you really want students to be making their own choices. Obviously, it's fantastic to recommend stuff to them that you think they'll enjoy. But it is really important, if it's recreational stuff, for it to be things that is of their interest, of their choosing. And that starts with what you buy. You know, it's difficult to find things that students will enjoy if the collection has been chosen based on the tastes of, you know, somebody who has a completely unrelated experience to them. And I think that in libraries where maybe there isn't that much communication about what the students want to read, you end up with a collection that does reflect the tastes of the library manager or of somebody else, mm-hmm. and not necessarily of the students. And then it becomes difficult for them to relate to the resources, and they don't end up using them. So as far as I'm concerned, even if I spend my entire library budget on Walking Dead graphic novels and Attack on Titan, if the kids are reading them, that's great. You know, it would be lovely if they were reading Miles Franklin Award winners, but if they're not, I'm going to give them what they are reading, and they'll keep reading. And that's the important thing, is that they keep reading.
Exactly. And you never know. I mean, one thing can lead to another, and it can be, you know, over many years of, if you develop a relationship and friendship with these students over many years, you can maybe sort of steer them in different directions once they're on board, you know.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Yeah.
And once they trust your judgment and they know that what you're recommending to them will probably be something they enjoy. But it's also a matter of them developing reading stamina and the attention span that is required by a really sort of challenging novel. You know, we're very used to getting our information and even our recreation in very small chunks now.
Yeah.
That you can disengage from at any point and re-engage in. And so when you're faced with a huge novel that's, you know, 200,000 words, and some of those words are words you don't know very well, and it actually takes a fair bit of mental and physical effort to get the words into your head, it's challenging. It's challenging for students. And so, yes, it is a matter of incrementally increasing the challenge level of the books that you give them so that they can get more, I guess, literary material as they get older, if that's their interest. Now I read young adult romance fiction and I love it. So it's not necessarily that it has to move in one direction and become more and more challenging. It's about what they engage with and what they enjoy.
I 100% agree with you. I think, you know, there's not, like, I think we've discussed this as well, the fact that there's, you know, nothing wrong in terms of what you can read, really. I think the fact that you're reading is a great thing.
We have plenty of students who only want to read nonfiction. I have one particular boy who loves reading car repair manuals, and that's fantastic.
I love it. I
found some at the op shop and I bought them, and they're pretty much his, you know.
Oh, that's brilliant. I just
that's great. That's what he wants to read. That's cool. I'm not going to judge him.
No, and he's,
you know, the English staff have a very different perspective on what they want the students to read. But as far as I'm concerned, as long as he's reading, it really doesn't matter what he's reading.
And the fact that there's an interest there, like a strong interest in something, that's something to be encouraged, I think.
Absolutely. You know, finding a passion for something is just amazing. And
yeah, definitely.
Even if the passion wanes after, you know, 4 books or 6 months or whatever it is, the fact that you had the passion is so cool.
I would hate
to stymie that by not having the resources available. And that is a challenge because, you know, there are some fairly esoteric things that kids are interested in. And sometimes you just have to say, look, they don't actually write books on that thing. I'm sorry. You're going to have to find that information on the internet because, yeah.
There might be other ways you can find that information, but yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I unfortunately have something for everyone, but you can certainly help them find the things that they're interested in if you don't have them yourself. And that's, I guess that's another important role that we play.
And I think you also have a very strong, the students will also use the local public library as well. Is that right? So there's some, you know, there's always ways you can kind of go, oh, have you looked in the collection there to see if your interest is covered there?
Yeah, we do. We strongly encourage students to use the public libraries. You know, their budgets are much bigger than ours, and we don't have as many e-resources available as they do. And especially at times like this where the libraries are closed, we've encouraged our students to take digital memberships with both our regional library and also with the Melbourne Library and with the State Library so that they can access things from a variety of different sources. And in, you know, as they leave school, having some familiarity with those organisations is also really good. So, yeah, hopefully they're all getting on board with that. There's a few of them that message me and say, can you help me find this thing at the public library? And I'll help them do the research. Some of them I know are already members, and so my work is done.
Oh.
And, yeah, I strongly encourage the others to get on board and do it, because even things like magazines, you know, magazine subscriptions are quite expensive. We don't have money in our budget for those. And the students who want to read about custom-built cars can find those magazines at the public library, which is awesome.
That's brilliant. Just didn't want to forget to ask you about the LGBTQ club that you have, because I wish that we had something like that at my school when I was going to high school. But is that, you know, you said that there's several different types of clubs that you sort of oversee, I guess, that meet up at lunchtime at the library. What are the types of clubs? I'm just really curious. Like what type of clubs meet at your school?
Well, we have the LGBT club, which is called the Alphabet Mafia. It's on a Monday at lunchtime. That was they chose that name.
That's so sweet.
It is. It's awesome. And we have, it's quite a well-supported club. We have about maybe 30 students who come regularly. It can be fairly chaotic. I try and make sure that there's some sort of an activity to do most weeks. Sometimes I tell them it's a social club and they can chat. That particular club does like to be engaged with some sort of activity, I guess because they have something in common, but it's not an interest. So there's not automatically a lot of conversation that happens around an interest, if you know what I mean. Like we have a Minecraft club where students know about Minecraft and they do Minecraft and they play Minecraft and they read about Minecraft. So they can talk about Minecraft very easily. And it's the same as the K-pop club. You know, you bring in anybody who's got an interest in K-pop and there's an automatic conversation that can happen there. You don't need any other overlap. With the LGBT club, I think, you know, we've got students from very different demographics. They've got lots of different interests. We have students who are part of our elite sport program. We have students who are very quiet and introverted. We have students who come along and don't speak at all. We have others that are very loud and, you know, half of them are part of the K-pop club. The other half are part of the drama club and a smattering are kind of quiet ones that don't really say much. And so having an activity that we can bring in for those students to do It's the same sort of thing as doing the puzzles and playing cards and the origami, where you've got something to engage them with while they get to know each other. And it's been working really well. It's fantastic. We made rainbow pins for Ida Hobbit Day, and I organized for the assistant principal to be on duty in the library as the teaching staff member for that day, and strongly encouraged him to also make himself a rainbow pin, which was cool. That was great for the kids to see him getting involved as well. That's fantastic. And it means that the students know that the library is a safe place for them too. And I'll go into bat for them if there's anybody who has anything negative to say or, you know, kind of behaves in any way that's antisocial towards them. I'm ready to step up and have a word with those students. So it's not like, not that I'm the Gestapo or, you know, sort of gatekeeper at all, but I have on a number of occasions taken students aside and said, let's talk about this. Let's talk about your reaction to this club and why you feel the way you do. And often it's a matter of lack of exposure or misunderstandings or just sort of, you know, ideas that students have got in their head that come from nowhere, really. And we now have a number of allies who come along and who are very supportive of our LGBT students who see themselves as straight, you know, cishet, not necessarily part of the community, but happy to stand alongside it and support and be there. And that's really cool too.
As someone yourself who identifies as non-binary, do you think it helps to be able to have those conversations with students as well?
Oh, definitely. 100%. I'm pan as well, so I am pretty comfortable with just about anything you can throw at me. And I have had a number of conversations with a number of students about them coming out to their parents or their families or their friends and how they might feel about it, how they might feel about things that are said at school or policies that we have at school. One of the policies is the uniform policy that myself and another staff member we're looking at suggesting some changes to the uniform policy so that there aren't uniform items for girls and boys. There are just uniform items and people can wear what they want to.
That's brilliant. I remember when I was in high school, I wanted to wear pants, and it was at a time when all the girls had to wear skirt. And we just had to sort of fight back a little bit in my year level. And then they just decided to change it, which was great for the students that followed. And it's often
the students that follow that get the benefit, unfortunately.
But it's, you know, I guess somebody has to make it.
Same at my school. Yeah. I mean, we have regulation underwear and a certain thickness of pantyhose stocking that you had to wear under your skirt. There was no room for discussion. I went to a Catholic school and they were very strict, you know. The straw boater had the blazer, the stockings, the skirt. You would present in a particular way and there was no room for discussion.
I think it's good that things are slowly changing for students, definitely. But it's as we all know, it's a slow process. But I just want to say thank you so much, Wen, for this discussion. I'm really finding it really fascinating. I've always loved school libraries, but I just didn't know, I guess, from the librarian's point of view, you know, what it meant to really manage a school library. So thank you for that. I really enjoyed your conversation.
I love chatting to you about it. I can talk about my job underwater, honestly. I really, really love what I do, and I'm so grateful to be part of all of these young people's lives to whatever degree I am, and hopefully be a positive adult and maybe a positive role model when it comes to reading and finding out about who you are in life and accepting everybody for who else they might be. And it's a real privilege, I feel, to be doing this job, and I'm grateful for it every day. And I wish I could go back to work, honestly.
hopefully soon. I hope one day soon. We don't know when, but we'll take it when we'll be all so happy and over the moon when we reach that day, I think.
We will. Before you end the call, I realized that when we talked the other day, I didn't actually mention anything about the library apprenticeship program that I run.
Yes.
And I thought I might put in a couple of words about that.
Please do.
Once a week, we have a number of students who come in and learn in a very casual and unstructured way, because I found that works best, about how libraries work, what we do in libraries, why we have libraries, why we do the things we do and how we do them. And it's really popular. I have to limit the numbers. The program tends to run over about 6 months. and we have a waiting list. I wanted to include that because I think it's a really positive outlook for libraries that there are a number of students, quite a large number of students, who are really interested in being part of the running of a library. And will, you know, they're already saying that they'd love to work in a library, they'd love to be part of a library when they're older. They're looking for work experience in libraries or their work experience program. So it makes me feel positive about the future of libraries, that there are not only people who are really enjoying benefiting from the services they provide, but there are also seemingly endless numbers of students who want to be involved in the running of them.
Well, that is a really positive note to end on, I think, because all those young budding librarians out there, I hope you do listen to this podcast, and I hope you really ask your local librarian a little bit about what it means to be a librarian, because a lot of people don't really understand fully what a librarian does. But also,
right.
Yeah, to realise there's possibilities, and you could too become a librarian one day maybe. So, yeah, that's a great way to end the discussion. So I'd just like to say thank you, Wen, and thank you, listeners. I really appreciate you listening to this episode. So that was Wen Moore, Library Manager at Diamond Valley College, and thanks for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with New Cardigan, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or visit our website, which is newcardigan.org. We hope you enjoy this episode. Remember to check out more episodes to come. Check out our website to become a member, join the newsletter, write a blog for Glam Blog Club, and look out for future events when we can get back together in person again, hopefully sometime soon. And remember, folks, JFDI.